From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It has become bedrock conventional wisdom that the American media is a vast liberal domain. But what if it's not? Eric Alterman says the U.S. media today is, in fact, the playground of hardball conservatives. Tonight on Point, political bias and the American media reconsidered. First, the latest from the Korean Peninsula. Pyongyang escalated already high tensions over the weekend when four North Korean fighter jets intercepted an American spy plane flying in international space. Then President Bush stepped up to say that though a diplomatic solution is preferred, military action is not off the table. I spoke earlier with Selig Harrison, director of the Asia Project at the Center for International Policy. I asked him where the Korean crisis is heading.
I think it's getting increasingly dangerous because, on the one hand, you have an attitude in the Bush administration, which the USA Today has a front-page article, which I think is quite correct, quoting people in the administration as saying, it's okay if the North Koreans go ahead and start reprocessing plutonium. That will show what bad guys they are and make it easier for us to rally support against them in Northeast Asia and develop more pressure and more confrontation. That's the Bush policy, which is really to ignore them and hope that they do things which will appear provocative and thus vindicate the Bush policy, which is to refuse dialogue. And I think they're saying, with this latest incident involving the reconnaissance aircraft, they're trying to show that they can't be ignored. They think they're going to bring matters to a head and succeed in getting dialogue with the United States. But I'm afraid that they're miscalculating. It's a counterproductive tactic. It really plays into the hands of the hardliners in the administration.
How far do you think North Korea is prepared to go to force this to a head? Reportedly, the four fighter jets flew within 50 feet at high speed, obviously, of a big U.S. reconnaissance plane. That seems like a close brush. How far might they go?
They don't want a war, in my view. They're interested in getting the United States to negotiate with them, to give them security assurances that we won't stage a preemptive strike against them, which they fear. But they're pursuing provocative tactics in trying to get this result, which are increasingly dangerous. When they cross the line and do something which does give an excuse to the administration to take military action, I can't predict. This was obviously, this airplane incident, very carefully calibrated to stop short of crossing that red line. I think that from their point of view, they know that getting into a military conflict with the United States could mean the end of North Korea. So that's not what they want, but their tactics do go right up to the brink.
And what about President Bush's rhetoric? He told reporters on Monday that if diplomatic efforts failed, quote, they'll have to work militarily, seeming to show the military card, even as the White House says they do not want to go that way.
That's true, and I think that from the North Korean point of view, there have been a lot of other things which have made them fear preemptive action. The fact that we, on September 20th, put forward a national security doctrine which reversed 50 years of strategic doctrine and said that we have the right to stage preemptive military action against another country whenever we think they've crossed a line that we designate. Mm. So that, you know, gives a sort of formal basis for preemptive action. Then you have Donald Rumsfeld 10 days ago saying North Korea is a terrorist state which might well transfer fissile materials to other terrorist states, and that is viewed in Pyongyang as a rationale for preemptive action almost any time. You have Colin Powell saying for the Senate that we don't have any intention of attacking North Korea as a nation. The implication being that we reserve the right for preemptive action against their nuclear facilities. So I think that their psychology, that they face a possible preemptive strike by the United States, is very real, and it's, of course, rooted in the kind of statements that the president has made, that he loathed Kim Jong-il in his interview with Bob Woodward, that he would like to topple the regime. When you have that kind of a statement from the president of the United States, a little country of 22 million, which with a lot of bravado, but knowing very well how weak it is and how easily we could change the regime through military action, it does lead to responses which are unfortunate. And they have been, however, warning for some time now that overflights, spy planes that go within 200 miles of their coast, which they claim to be their territorial limit. They've been warning against this, and the United States has been increasing the spy plane flights by these Cobra Ball flights, which are designed to find information on potential missile tests. It's very reminiscent of what happened in April 2001 with the Navy surveillance plane off the coast of China. China had been concerned that the intensity of these flights had been growing.
When President Bush says that the military option is our last choice, where does the red line lie here? You said a moment ago that North Korea knows how easily their regime could be changed by force, but is that the case?
If we thought we had an excuse for military action and it led to an all-out war, we certainly have the superior power. South Korea is telling us to cool it, not to bring things to a point where there's any danger of a war, not to take military action against the Yongbyon nuclear reactor. And it's increasingly clear that the administration, they've been leaking the statement that they're not going to consider the reprocessing of plutonium if North Korea goes ahead with that at Yongbyon to be the red line. This, again, is this very good piece of reporting in USA Today that these officials think a nuclear escalation would make clear North Korea's intentions, alienate neighbors who have tried to conciliate it and help the United States build a united front to confront Pyongyang. So we're not at all going in the direction that South Korea wants us to go in, which is to negotiate with them bilaterally. These could be followed later by multilateral negotiations.
So you think that that needs to happen sooner or later to stand down from this crisis?
It certainly does. I mean, this is a crisis that doesn't have to be a crisis. The administration is not interested in settling with North Korea in a way that involves any help for North Korea, any quid pro quos to get them to stop their nuclear weapons program. And yet this nuclear weapons program would be very dangerous, not in the sense of being threatening to the United States, but because it could lead to a nuclear Japan, a nuclear South Korea, a nuclear arms race in Northeast Asia.
But no movement that you see in Washington toward that greater openness toward talks.
No, I think we're going in the other direction, and I think that's why I think it's getting increasingly dangerous, because we're trying to ignore them, and they're going to keep trying to show that they won't be ignored.
Not a pretty picture. Selig Harrison, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Selig Harrison is director of the Asia Project at the Center for International Policy. He spoke with me earlier from San Francisco. What liberal media, asks writer Eric Alterman in the title of his hard-hitting new book, Left-Wing Media Dominance, says Alterman, is a big, bad myth perpetuated by the right wing to make the public believe something that just ain't so. Powerful conservative voices and their backers are, he says, just working the refs in the great game of American politics, screaming over phantom fouls to cow the U.S. press right out of its job. It's a big thesis that flies in the face of conventional wisdom and maybe your own perception. But if Alterman is right and the game is rigged, where does that leave America's conversation with itself and with the world at a time when so much is at stake? How do you see the American media today? Is it leaning left? Is it leaning right? Is it doing its job? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Eric Alterman, author of the new book, What Liberal Media? The Truth About Bias and the News. He writes the Stop the Press's media column for The Nation magazine and the Altercation weblog for MSNBC.com. Good evening and welcome, Eric Alterman.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us tonight. Eric Alterman, everybody knows the press has a liberal bias, so what are you on about here?
Well, I guess there's no reason for me to even be on the show.
But that is exactly the attitude and the outlook that you concede in the book is pervasive.
Yeah, well, actually, the numbers for the country are about 46% say that it has a liberal bias, 13% say it has a conservative bias, and then other people don't see a bias. Sorry. But, you know, here's the way it works, I think. I think the press had a liberal bias for a long time, up until about 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And the right wing had a case that their ideas weren't taken seriously. And they built up all these institutions, and they made this incredibly well-funded assault on liberalism. And liberalism just sort of collapsed. It collapsed from its own faults, and, you know, Vietnam War, civil rights movement collapsing, inflation, et cetera, but it collapsed from this enormous well-funded, hundreds of millions of dollars that was spent to destroy it by the right. But the right found that this assault, was, this tactic was so effective, this working the refs, as the chairman of the Republican Party, Rich Bond, called it, former chairman, that they stuck with it long after they'd won the game. So if you look at the landscape, the political landscape of opinion media, for instance, talk radio, 100% conservative. There's less ideological variation in American talk radio today than there was in the Soviet Union in 1934. Look at cable TV. Phil Donahue's gone, all conservative. Couple of liberals who play liberals on TV, no liberals got their own show. Look at broadcast media. It's not as bad because most people try to be down the middle. But again, the only people who are invited to give their views on the air are conservatives, George Will and John Stossel.
You're talking television there.
Right. Right, television. And then print, it's also a little bit more even, not quite even, but again, the right is way more to the right than the so-called left is to the left. Look, just compare the New York Times editorial page, which is genuinely liberal, with the Wall Street Journal editorial page, which is right-wing and ferocious and crazy.
What should we see in that comparison?
Well, I'll give you a for instance. The New York Times endorsed the Republican governor, very conservative governor, in the past election. When has the Wall Street Journal had anything good to say about a liberal Democratic politician? The New York Times endorsed the use of the, I can never remember this, what are the names of those labor laws with the Taft-Hartley bill?
Yes.
Against the workers in San Francisco to force them back to work and end that strike.
So you're saying liberal publications occasionally take conservative stands and frequently these days give space to conservatives, but conservative publications do not return the courtesy.
Right. And moreover, no, both of those things. Right. In other words, liberals are not as liberal as conservatives are conservatives. Plus, they're much more interested in publishing conservatives than conservatives are publishing liberals. There is a tiny liberal media, and I work in it. I make my living in it.
At The Nation, which is avowedly liberal.
Right. And everywhere in the liberal media, The Nation, The New Yorker, the New York Times editorial page, you can find the New Republic, the tiny little part of it that's still liberal, you can find lots of conservatives. You can't find any liberals in the conservative media.
So how do you put all of this on the scales? Is it possible to put all on the scales and come out with a verdict about whether or not overall the American media is straight up or leans left or leans right?
Well, I think there's no argument. I think anyone who denies the fact that conservatives control the opinion media is just being dishonest.
And the opinion media, you mean what you call the punditocracy?
Right, the punditocracy. Well,
mm-hmm.
Now, what conservatives will respond to this, I'll do their job for them here. They say that's all very well and good. And,
that's so liberal of you.
Yeah, but Eric, the problem is not the opinion media. You're right; we're doing a pretty good job with them. The problem is so-called objective reporting. The problem is Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw and Peter Jennings and the New York Times and the Washington Post on the front page, not the editorial page. We don't mind liberal editorials. We mind biased reporting. And all reporters are liberals, and you should just admit it and stop whining.
That's what about it?
Well, there's a two-part answer. The first part is, it's true that even though we don't really have any good figures about this, and maybe Robert Lichter is going to come on later. Is he coming on later?
Yes, we'll have a couple of people responding.
Yeah. Robert Lichter is going to come on later. He's going to have some figures, and I'm not really going to like his figures, and we can argue about
okay.
that. But we don't really have any good figures on media bias. It's very hard to measure. And we don't even really have any good figures on journalists' personal biases. But it's true most journalists are social liberals. I won't deny it. They're also economic conservatives. Now, on the social liberal side, there's an enormous right-wing structure ready to pounce on them whenever they say anything biased.
So you're saying they're policed, they're kept in line. We're going to go to a break, but in very brief, Eric Alterman, what does it matter if you're right, if conservatives now control the media agenda?
What does it matter? It matters because we have a president who's getting away with murder, and nobody's calling him to task because there's a joke of a liberal media, but it's actually a conservative media.
Well, and there you've got it in a nutshell. We're talking tonight about the politics of the American media. Conventional wisdom is it's liberal. Eric Alterman says hogwash. It's conservative. What do you think? If you see a bias in the media, which way does it lean? Is the punditocracy a fair measure of media politics? And has the whole national conversation somehow been skewed here? In which direction? Join us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
from Boston.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the politics of the American media. Conventional wisdom is it's liberal. Eric Alterman says hogwash, it's conservative. He's out with a new book. It's entitled What Liberal Media? The Truth About Bias and the News. You can join the conversation as well. Has the right wing been successfully working the refs for years, calling phantom fouls on the left wing, or is it a nonstop battle to push back a knee-jerk liberal media? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Eric Alterman joins us from New York. And Eric Alterman, you know that though you say that at one time there was the media could justly have been described as liberal. It's been a long time. But the books, not your book, but the others, keep coming. There was the Coulter book. There was Bernie Goldberg's book very recently, not that long ago, entitled Bias, where he lays out his case for liberal bias in network television. He says it's big, it's bad. He says if CBS were a prison instead of a journalistic enterprise, here he does not like Dan Rather, as you know, thinks he's liberal.
Did you read Bernie's book?
Yes, I did.
Did you happen to notice whether or not Bernie had any evidence for anything that he said?
Well,
a single footnote in it anywhere.
Well, I mean, what exactly constitutes evidence here?
I'll give you an example.
It's our impressions of people's politics, isn't it? In the punditocracy?
No. You can. My book has about 50 pages of footnotes,
mm-hmm.
And in my book, I say, for instance, during the 2000 election. The media coverage was skewed against Al Gore, and his positions were misrepresented hundreds and hundreds of times by the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe was terrible on Al Gore, but on many, many newspapers. The Washington Post was even worse. And then I give you the quotes, and I give you the page and the date, and you can look it up and see whether or not you agree with me. Maybe I'm wrong. The Boston Herald, which is a right-wing newspaper, said I'm totally convincing, and I'm absolutely right, and I'm terrific, which was very surprising to me, but nice. Now, Bernie Goldberg has none of that. Absolutely nothing. All he says is, here, somebody said this to me, but they said that they would deny it if I ever repeated it. He then makes a whole lot of accusations. For instance, I could just give you one for instance, that that the networks are always labeling liberals as never labeling liberals as liberals, but always labeling conservatives as conservatives.
So liberal organizations are just organizations, but conservative organizations
right.
are right-wing organizations.
Right. Now will be a women's organization, and Phyllis Schlafly will be a right-wing nut, according to Goldberg. Now this accusation, because this attack, this enterprise by the right has been so effective, this accusation was accepted virtually universally. It was accepted by Howard Kurtz on his show. It was accepted in a review of Goldberg's book by the dean of the Columbia Journalism School in the Columbia Journalism Review, but it turns out to be false. If you do the numbers, as Jeffrey Nunberg, a Stanford University linguist, did, you find that, in fact, it actually skews a little bit the other way. Larry Tribe is a liberal a little bit more often than Robert Bork is a conservative. Ted Kennedy is a liberal a little bit more often than Orrin Hatch or Jesse Helms.
So the label gets hung both ways. Eric Alterman, you say that ultimately this...
No, but my point is that this was accepted as gospel by everyone who read Goldberg's book, and it's false.
And become part of what you call a useful myth that you say is
right.
wielded by the right.
This is a place where I plug the website at www.whatliberalmedia.com because I give you Nunberg's entire study. You can look it up and you can read the study. You don't have to trust my word for it. It's on the website.
We're going to name names and get into it here, but I want to get to your ultimate conclusion, which is, as I understand it, you say the constant drumbeat of what you call groundless accusation has proven an effective weapon in weakening journalism's watchdog function. Why would that be the case?
Well, I think that a great part of why so many corporations and extremely wealthy individuals fund this attack on the media, allegedly liberal, is to prevent the media from carrying out its watchdog operations. I think that all of this business reporting that went so easy on business in the 1990s is what let Enron and WorldCom and all these guys get away with murder. And I think that the really powerful institutions in our society don't want a powerful media breathing down their necks. I mean, that's just sort of common sense. So the media has been chastened and weakened, and in part by its own corporate structure. By the fact that only six companies own virtually the entire media in the United States.
And you describe it as deliberate. You say it's like working the ref, like the coach who stands at the sidelines shouting again and again that the ref's making bad calls in hopes that the ref will ultimately be cowed.
There's some people who believe it, but the smart ones don't. I name Pat Buchanan, William Crystal, Rich Pond and James Baker, among others, as conservatives who have admitted that the liberal media is kind of a joke, but it's a useful tool, and they use it. A paragraph later, after I quote William Crystal saying there never really was any liberal media, I quote a mailing I got from the Weekly Standard signed by William Crystal saying the liberal media won't let us tell the truth, but that's why you need to buy the Weekly Standard.
So you're saying not only is the media not liberal, but conservatives know it's not liberal and use the cudgel anyway.
The smart ones. If you have any smart ones on tonight, they'll know it.
Well, we're joined right now from Bristow, Virginia, by Tim Graham. He's director of media analysis at the Media Research Group. It's a nonprofit conservative media watchdog. Its website calls themselves the leader in documenting, exposing, and neutralizing liberal media bias. Good evening and welcome, Tim Graham.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Tim, you know Eric Alterman's...
the best thing for Tim's career ever. This is the third time Tim's been a guest as a result of my book in the past
week. Well, there you go. But I think Tim has got some exposure on his own as well. Tim, you know Eric Alterman's argument. What do you make of it? Is this a myth perpetuated by the right that the media has a leftward slant?
Boy, I wouldn't have a job if it was a myth.
Well, you might have a job anyway.
Well, I think, look, here's the whole point. I opened this book, and actually I didn't have to open this book, even though I do have a copy. On the website itself, in the introduction, Alterman says, the entire case is a lie. When you start an argument by saying the entire case is a lie, you're saying I'm unreasonable, I'm unserious, I'm not.
Wait, the entire case is a lie. I mean,
I never even met you until you started attacking my book, so I wasn't talking about you.
No, but I'm simply saying, no, my point is, to me, what this book sounds like to me is what we hear out of the network executives when they get up in front of Congress after the 2000 elections and say, you know, we are not biased. Look, to me, they look like tobacco executives saying nicotine is not addictive. They really undercut their own credibility. With the American people, the latest Gallup poll shows 45% of the American people think the media is biased to the left. 15% think it's biased to the right.
And Eric Alterman takes that on. He calls that the result of an effective conservative campaign over many years to shape public opinion. What's your view, Tim Graham?
I'll take responsibility for that poll if I can.
Meaning you're saying you'd be happy to shape the public's perceptions, whether it's fact or not, alert them to the truth.
I think that the American people watch the news with their own eyes and ears, and they can see the difference. I think that when Alterman tries to say, as he said tonight, that the media weakened its watchdog's function in the 90s, I mean, I think that we had a president who was accepting campaign contributions from the communist Chinese, and the networks didn't want to touch that story. So is that a case?
That's a case of the liberal media.
That's
the nuttiest thing I've ever heard in my life.
No, stop.
Wen Ho Lee was hounded by an intense attack on his
character
by the so-called liberal New York Times
that had
no
story.
Basis. Well, that's the communist
story.
Chinese.
Wen Ho Lee is a different story. It cannot be challenged that the Clinton campaign
are you saying that there was
foreign
no coverage? Are you saying, wait, I just want to get it straight what you're saying, then you can go and make your charges. Are you saying there was no coverage of alleged donations by the Chinese to the Clinton administration, that no one else, that we never heard about that, that you're the only person that knows about that?
No, I'm saying that watchdog.
It was covered to
death. I'm talking about the watchdog. Stop now.
Go ahead.
I'm saying that the watchdog function of the press was not, the watchdogs weren't barking at that time. Fred Thompson had hearings in the Senate, and the only coverage they got was people like Linda Douglas coming on at ABC and saying, these hearings aren't going anywhere, Peter. The American people don't want to hear anything about them.
And so you're saying, Tim Graham, that this is a result of liberal softness on Bill Clinton, but Eric Alterman's not even buying, I guess, in this case, the idea that there wasn't coverage of those contributions.
Well, I would like to see some evidence.
I'm saying to you first and foremost that Eric Alterman is beginning in this book by saying, there is no evidence. There is no evidence of any kind. Now he's saying tonight that Bernard Goldberg doesn't have any evidence. He knows chapter in there of quotes from the Media Research Center, which are very much evidence from the liberal media's own mouth.
I want to go to the heart of what he does lay out, what we can all see there. Take on what Eric Alterman calls the punditocracy for a moment. He describes, with lots of names listed, how the weight of that, by his calculation, and it's out there for anyone to see, I guess, leans heavily toward the right. Look at the big pundits, look at the volume of pundits and where they play, and he says you will find in anything approaching mainstream American media a heavy dominance of conservatives. You agree, Tim Graham?
No, I would say that Eric did very effectively summarize what I would tell you, which is liberals always start with the opinion media, which tells me that they know that the news media is liberal because they avoid the weak argument they've got, which is that Eric Alterman says in his book, I was in Little Rock in 1992. The reporters were really happy when Bill Clinton won. But, well, I mean, and he drops these all the way throughout the book. He's sitting here telling us, yes, the media is liberal on abortion and gay rights and whatnot. Well, okay, so
that's not what I'm telling you, Tim.
Eric Alterman, pick it up.
How can you make all these assumptions and drop all these
things
and then write a book called What Liberal Media?
Tim Graham, stand by. I want to hear from Eric Alterman here. Eric, what's your reply?
Yeah, Tim is mischaracterizing what I say, and I can't tell you whether he's doing it purposely or not because I don't want to go to motives here. But I don't say that the media are liberal. And by the way, it's are, not is. It's an important distinction.
Mm-hmm.
The media are very complicated. There's an awful lot of media, and you can't speak about a single media. But what Tim is confused about here is what I say is that, yes, elite journalists are, by and large, this is what I started to say before the break, mm-hmm. are, by and large, socially liberal. But elite journalists are also under the trying to be as objective as they can. They're also constantly under attack by people like Tim and people like Tim's organization, which I imagine is funded, I don't know this for sure, maybe Tim can correct me if I'm wrong, by Richard Mellon Scaife and other conservative wealthy individuals who are trying to weaken the watchdog function of the media.
Tim Graham, is that who underwrites your organization, just for clarity?
Richard Scaife has supported us in the past. I don't accept the idea, again, that what we're about is weakening the watchdog function of the media.
Let us put that aside for a moment. I want to get the rest of Eric's reply.
We weakened watchdogs when it comes to liberals and Democratic politicians.
That's point A.
Tim Graham, stand by, please. Eric, please.
Yeah. Now, it's true that conservatives had a case for quite a while on social coverage of social issues, particularly, I would say, evangelical Christians had a case. And on the abortion case, up until, say, the early 1990s, when David Shaw won a Pulitzer Prize for revealing that the anti-abortion forces were getting a raw deal, those issues were covered unfairly. But once it was revealed by David Shaw in a series that was honored in the media, and people changed their tune because they wanted to be professional. They wanted to be as objective as they could. Now, on the economic side, so I think it's basically even on the social side, although I do think they bend over a little too far backwards to Tim and his friends now. But on the economic side, where journalists are more conservative than the public is, where journalists are much more favorable to corporate America and to free trade than the rest of the public is, there is no countervailing force. They work for these enormous corporations that are conservative. They get pushed to the right by people like Tim and all those hundreds of groups. There are 300 conservative organizations listed in the Heritage Foundation's guide just in Washington. There's an enormous structure pushing journalists to the right on economic issues.
We know that structure's out there. I want to turn to Tim Graham. Tim, do you see? Your group is the leader in documenting, exposing, and neutralizing liberal media bias. Do you see in the American media today conservatives on the ropes? They seem quite robust to my reading.
Well, that's not really the point. I mean, you're right that it's not really the point. The point is
there it is.
No, it's not. The point is what did we just see on the news tonight? That's the battleground. It's not whether George Bush is up in the polls. I mean, it's very easy. I think this is the way most armchair Americans play media critic. Well, the Republicans won in 2002, therefore the media must have been Republican. No, I don't think you can make that assumption. I'm sitting here listening to National Public Radio tonight. They're doing a big story on how, you know, all across the country they're doing an anti-war play of Aristophanes. That's a one-sided anti-war story being done by Margot Adler, the Wiccan priestess.
Well, hang on. But at the same time, you're going to hear plenty of Rumsfeld quoted and plenty of President Bush quoted and plenty of Tony Blair quoted.
Let me ask you, is that honest? Is that really a balance? I mean, the whole point of it is
the
American public. Well, but see, I think that's very much the media mindset. Here we have the American public, 66% in the latest CBS News poll said they support a regime change in Iraq through military force. That 66%, the media says, well, that's represented by Bush. So I don't have to actually get any actual human beings.
Well, I don't know that there aren't human beings, but I guess what we stand up for on this show is a kind of a robust spectrum of voices, and that's what I presume Americans want to hear. Do we have a robust spectrum now?
I would certainly say to you, yes. In a story, if you have Rumsfeld and then you have an anti-war spokesman, that's a balanced story, but it can leave the impression, and I think it's meant to leave the impression, that there's this robust public against the war, and the only people for the war are Bush, Rumsfeld, and the officials.
Well, I don't know if it's that simple. Let's turn to our callers. There's a lot of people who want to join this conversation. Michael's calling. Welcome, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks very much for the show.
Sure.
Long overdue, in my opinion. I would just like to throw out the notion that, quote, liberal media, unquote, falls pretty much within the same realm as Axis of Evil, death tax, and class war in a sort of conservative mantra that is regurgitated over and over again.
So you don't buy it, you don't see a liberal media, you see it as Eric Alterman describes it, a myth used by the right wing.
Absolutely. Quite. It's veering. It's from right to righter. There is no liberal.
Well, then
media
why do we
whatsoever.
Have the media celebrating the human shields in Baghdad? ABC News, the New York Times.
What planet is Tim on?
But isn't
what planet is the media celebrating the human shield in Baghdad? I have not seen a single word anywhere.
Well, I have heard reporting on them,
not even in the Nation are the human shields in Baghdad. So, Tim, you are out of your mind. And by the way, you misinformed this audience when you said that 66% of the country supports military action against
Iraq. That's the latest CBS News poll.
Tim, I'm going to finish one sentence with you here, Tim. 66% of the country supports military action with the Security Council assent. Only 38% supports it without But also, here's the larger point. Tim was complaining that NPR, which he thinks is a representative of the mainstream media for some reason, Tim was complaining that they reported on this performance of Lestrada, okay?
Yes.
What is the problem with reporting on something that's actually happening? The problem that conservative has with the so-called liberal media is they don't like the news itself.
No,
they want a news that's like the old Soviet Union.
No.
They loved it after 9/11, and you can ask him. He thought that, and Bernard Goldberg, they both said how terrific the news was right after 9/11 when everybody was wearing flags, when there was no dissent at all, when everybody was marching to the same tune.
Eric Alterman, we're going to lose Tim Graham in just a minute. Tim Graham, 30 seconds here, your final thought.
Look, the whole point is that they can do a whole segment in Lysistrata, but they can't do a segment when 10,000 people organize in Houston to say they support our president. That's the whole point, is if you define the news as people having a performance that's anti-war, and then the next night you do a story about all the city councils that are voting against the war, you're presenting tonight's anti-war news, not tonight's news.
Tim Graham is Director of Media Analysis at the Media Research Group in Washington, D.C. Tim, thank you for joining us tonight.
You bet.
We're talking tonight about the politics of the American media. Conventional wisdom is it's liberal. Eric Alterman, our guest, says hogwash. It's conservative. What do you think? If you see a bias in the media, which way does it lean? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight about the politics of the American media. Conventional wisdom is it's liberal. Eric Alterman says hogwash. It's conservative. He's out with a new book called What Liberal Media? The Truth About Bias and the News. He's joining us tonight from New York. You can join us as well. Has the whole national conversation somehow been skewed? And in which direction? Has the U.S. press been cowed by the right-wing megaphone, scared away from big issues by the charge of bias? Is a paralyzed media letting down the democracy? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are joined now from Washington by Robert Lichter. He's president of the Center for Media and Public Affairs, a nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization. His new book is The Nightly News Nightmare. He's co-author of Media Elite. Good evening and welcome, Robert Lichter.
Thank you.
Robert Lichter, as I understand, you have looked in some detail at not just the punditocracy, but down into the text of reporting, and tried to pull out a kind of statistical analysis of politics in the American media. What do you see there?
Well, there is a vast scholarly literature on this, and there's so much media to go around. You can find anecdotes on both sides, which is why right and left start yelling at each other. But I assume
yes, they do.
I don't have to yell like Crossfire. This is public radio, and I can just talk reasonably, right?
We'd love that.
So, you know, to take Clinton's trope, it all depends on what the meanings of the words liberal, media, and bias are. Journalists are more liberal on personally on some issues than others, as Eric noted. There are a lot of different facets of media, and it's hard to say what you define by bias. Does everything deserve equal opportunity to get a point of view across?
So we don't want to look away from the what is debate. On the other hand, oh boy, that's a dense thicket. Help us with your surmise from all of your work.
Don't worry. That's the introduction. Now I leave academia.
Okay.
But I did want to say, it is just too complex to say, here's a bunch of anecdotes, I'm right. Let me take one.
But since the reigning fact or mythos is that it's got a liberal bias, I think that's still fair to say. Maybe Eric will knock that down with his book. How does that stand up?
I'd say within the mainstream media, you get more cases where the media tilt toward the liberal side than where they tilt toward the conservative side, but there are many cases where they tilt toward neither side. Now, so just so I'm not seeming completely mealy-mouthed,
okay,
let me give an example. The clearest example we have is on election news, where you have scholars who look at every single soundbite or every line of text, mm-hmm, and note every evaluation. Every time somebody says Bill Clinton is the best man to be president, or Bill Clinton is a sleaze and I don't want him in the White House, you check these things off, and you go through all sorts of rigorous social science research on this. And we now have six elections, which I also talk about on my book, Nightly News Nightmare, which gives all of this election data, mm-hmm, in which scholars have done this kind of evaluating. And what you find is, starting with 1980, Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter both got very negative press. In 1984, Walter Mondale got more positive coverage than Ronald Reagan. And now I'm always talking about the three broadcast network evening news shows, sometimes national.
Okay, surge us forward in time here.
Yeah, okay, 88, Bush and Dukakis both got very negative press. Hmm. 92, Clinton got much more positive press than Bush. 96, Clinton got much more positive press than Dole.
And you're saying positive press not just as a reflection of the national mood, but somehow press generated.
No, I'm saying what is the content of the media, the things that are spoken or the things that are written, regardless of, and this is why it's hard to know whether you call this bias. You can
okay.
say it's a tilt. You look at what's there every time an evaluative statement is there.
And Gore Bush in 2000?
Bush, let's see, if you looked at all of the stories in the network evening news shows from Labor Day to Election Day and all the comments within those stories, Bush ended up, I believe, 40% positive, 60% negative. Al Gore ended up 37% positive, 63% negative.
So what do you pull out of all that?
What I pull out of that is that reporters try to be unbiased. And bias occurs when there's slippage and they unconsciously give a perspective that they assume is down the middle and don't realize what they're doing. And in some cases, since most journalists, our most mainstream establishment media journalists, are Democrats and liberals, this does sometimes come across in the coverage.
But if we step back, Eric Alterman's trying to give us the forest and some of the trees here.
Right.
And he says at that level, really the old liberal press thing has become a kind of myth. And it doesn't really represent the overall impact of the American press media envelope on the American mind and conversation today.
Well said.
Well, I think that that this is making another of his points, which is that the conservative press has managed to leverage itself so that it seems like they are much more prominent than they actually are. The broadcast network evening news shows get about 8 to 10 million viewers each night. Hmm. Fox News gets 1 to 2 million.
And yet it makes a big noise. Eric Alterman, I want to bring you back in. Put a fork into Robert Lichter's analysis here. How does it line up with what you're finding and seeing?
Well, I think that it's like, to compare the network evening news with Fox News is to compare, the proverbial apples and oranges. Fox News is an ideological right-wing network. The network news tries to play it straight, and every once in a while, as he says, there's slippage. So to compare, what the conservatives have been absolutely brilliant at doing is redefining the nomenclature so that you do have a definite right-wing position now, Fox News, Wall Street Journal editorial page, Washington Times, New York Post, all that. And then anything else that's not that extreme conservatism becomes liberal. So you have like John Ashcroft is conservative, and then any other Republican who's not an evangelical Christian who, you know, has all these extreme positions is defined as liberal. Now, I also would take issue with his election analysis of the past election because I don't think it's that useful. I don't think most of this academic research is useful, even though I'm very proud of this PhD I just spent 11 years earning.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's about 6 weeks old.
Newly minted Dr. Eric Alterman.
Yeah. And the reason I don't think it's useful is because social scientists try very hard to control their variables so that they can look at one variable.
Yeah.
And you can't control the variables in the media. So that if you were looking at the media on 9/12/2001, you would have to say that the media became a great deal more conservative than it was on 9/10. But it was exactly the same people. So all of these attitudes that that allegedly defined the media in terms of liberalism were thrown out the window the next day, and for the next year, all we got was patriotic flag waving.
I just want to get some callers in. There are so many who want to join us. Lori's calling. Hi, Lori. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Great show.
Thanks.
And really appreciate it. I wanted to say, first of all, I think just the fact that you're having a show on the question of whether the cliche media bias is still liberal, the bias is still liberal, it just shows you how the conservatives have made such an impact, because I just find it incredible that it's even a question.
You mean, in your view, it's hands down conservative, period?
Hands down conservative. I'll just stay with the most recent issue, the war. One day I just woke up, what was it, September of last year, and the headlines were about how we had to go to war. And I had no idea what happened the day before in Iraq that we suddenly had to go to war. The media played it up. The White House decided to they issued their press conference saying we're going to go to war with Iraq. And there was almost no questioning of it. It just became three or four headlines of the front page. I'm talking New York Times here, New York Times or Boston Globe, about different aspects. Why we're going to, you know, about, you know, how we're going to go to war, what the plan's going to be. It was astounding, and I would be asking, did I miss something? Did something happen in Iraq?
But Laura, you know, maybe you've even heard on this show, we've had Ann Coulter, Pat Buchanan, lots of conservative voices on this show, Andrew Sullivan, Bill Kristol, and many of them still complain bitterly that the press is biased against an objective viewpoint, let alone a conservative viewpoint.
Right. Well, I just think that the facts make their points laughable and show them to be the conservative hacks that they are. I mean, I don't think that they're really engaging in debate. They're engaging in advocacy.
Which is Eric Alterman's point. Lori, thanks for calling. Eric, let me put that to you. How do you see, if we take your analysis here for a minute, how do you see it intersecting with policy around Iraq and war?
Well, I think that in this case, you have another example, and I talk about this in the book with regard to Afghanistan. You have another example of conservatives complaining about the news. Not complaining about, they don't like the actual news. The New York Times was considered to be, is considered to be, and I would be surprised if Dr. Lichter disagrees with this, it is considered to be an arm, a part and parcel of the anti-war movement by conservatives and by many mainstream analysts, okay? The reason for this is because the New York Times alone was reporting on dissension within the uniformed military, dissension among George H.W. Bush's former advisors like Brent Scowcroft and Larry Eagleburger and to some degree James Baker, dissension among Republicans like the conservative Dick Armey, who were saying just what this woman was saying. They woke up one day and says, whoa, wait a minute. What is this about going to war with Iraq? Iraq had nothing to do with September 11th. Why all of a sudden are we going to war with Iraq? Well, the very reporting of this stuff, reporting on Republicans and conservatives and military men like Norman Schwarzkopf and General Vinnie, this is considered prima facie evidence of bias. They
of
don't
liberal
like the
bias.
News. Mm. They don't like the news. It's not liberalism. It's news.
Let's get a call. Garrett's calling from Boston. Hi, Garrett. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I was hoping to ask your esteemed experts, why are the conservative pundits doing so well? Why do they dominate? Are they more entertaining? Are they being put in place by the sort of the corporate heads that own the networks? But I mean, I just noticed that obviously the airwaves are so heavily populated with them. I wonder if there's any sort of, what's the causation there?
And help us get the coloring of your question, Garrett. Are you suggesting that they're popular because they just make more sense or something else?
Well, I wonder if people sort of, I've always wondered if people like the conservative pundits because of their sort of quote-unquote tell-it-like-it-is type presentation that they give you. You know, where, like Rush Limbaugh, or mm-hmm. I had the misfortune of living in Virginia for a couple of years and having to listen to G. Gordon Liddy for a while. It's just, it's almost like shock jock.
And so why does it work so well? Eric Alterman, you look at that. I'll ask Robert Lichter as well, but first you. How do you interpret the obvious success of right-wing and conservative pundits?
Well, I get asked this all the time at bookstores appearance, which is mostly liberals coming to see me. And I say basically it's your fault to the liberals. Some people on the left see it as a political conspiracy. I don't. I think it's market-driven. I think that most network owners are probably moderately conservative, more conservative than liberal.
You're saying that it's being foisted on the market by a media owners?
No. What I'm saying is that conservatives have organized themselves into a very effective market. We've got a real conservative movement in this country.
They're also citizens. They're not just consumers of their own bread baked in their own kitchen, right?
I mean consumers of media.
Yes, but is it not possible that this just resonates with more Americans than the liberal voice?
No. If you look at opinion polls, the country is to the left of the Democrats. On most issues, the country was far closer to Al Gore, in fact, I think to the left of Al Gore on many issues, than to George Bush. The reason George Bush won is complicated, but he won because Ralph Nader was in the race. He ran because he ran a better race than Gore, but he ran because he won. He didn't win, actually. He came close enough to have the Supreme Court take it for him.
But it's the liberals' fault because what? They don't turn out and buy the products that liberal pundits end up advertising on their pages?
Not advertising. They don't listen to Phil Donahue. They don't listen to liberal talk radio. Now, it hasn't really been done very well yet. Maybe it'll be done well by Al Franken on talk radio. But the fact is there's a very sophisticated, well-organized conservative movement in this country of millions of people. There's no analogous force on the left.
Robert Lichter, let me get your response. Our time's running down. But just on that point of the obvious great success of conservative opinion, thinkers, talkers, pundits, why so great?
I think there is a group of conservatives who feel alienated, feel that the media are against them on the other side, and who were looking for a voice that is at once strident and entertaining to present their perspective. And so there is more of a ready-made base of an audience for conservative than liberal talk radio. And the thing is, the Rush Limbaughs and Bill O'Reillys project a kind of populism, that kind of regular guy against the elites that used to be, the Democrats' strength, and I think it hasn't been for a while.
And it's hard to figure. There's a lot more to talk about here. Our time is running down. Eric Alterman, just a final thought from you. We've just got 20 seconds left, but you say ultimately this weakens democracy.
Yeah, because there's only one side allowed in the room. We've got a debate between the far right and the center, or the central right. And the center right, by calling the center or the central right liberalism, we entirely lose that alternative. And even if you disagree with liberals, they may turn out to be right about a few things, and you'll never hear about it.
Eric Alterman, come back and talk with us more. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Eric Alterman is author of the new book, What Liberal Media? The Truth About Bias and the News. And Robert Lichter in Washington, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Robert Lichter is author of the new book, The Nightly News Nightmare, president of the Center for Media and Public Affairs. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you.